on that ever so seamless note, good evening, good evening, good evening, and welcome back to the studio. Yes, we are all safe and back from all the work in Lave, and we're quite excited about next week.
Except me. I am so not excited.
Except the apology officer, who's sulking.
I'm not sulking.
You are pouting a little.
We do have the usual crew in the studio tonight, plus a special guest presenter. Welcome to the studio, WK Jez.
Thanks for having me. I hear it's leg week. I brought the spare Firemaster with me.
Oh, I haven't seen one of those in years.
Oh, so you'll let him have a Firemaster, but I can't do my calisthenics?
Oh, so that's what you're doing. I thought you were having a funny turn.
Okie dokie. Right, that's enough of that. Time to put our feet up and...
Oh, now you're just taking the mickey.
Best foot forward.
Right, the headlines. Things that go boom in the night.
Mad Monk Monkey Business in Epsilon Eridani.
Lacon's ugly duckling is beautiful on the inside.
The Major General's major expansion.
Space goes social.
Ingenuity's interesting inclusion.
I'm talking about a big election.
And I'm going to clonk you with this pan if you talk like that.
Yes, it's the news. First, tonight, in their latest rush to combat the antics of the frameshift bandits, the Pilots Federation have been hard at work preparing the new planetary surface training simulators ready for next week. Hot on the heels of their reveal of the first batch of equipment, the pool of multi-tool drool that should give commanders more useful widgets and gadgets than a Swiss Army knife, some of the probable lobbable surprise munitions... I've tripped myself up this week. Some of the probable lobbable surprise munitions have been showcased via their media channels. First on the list is the Iron Pineapple, a cricket ball-sized explosive that you don't want to be catching. Perfect for doing the dishes, creating new bunkers in the local golf course, and of course for tenderising anything from passing herds of ruminants to great-grandma's normally inedible meatloaf. Next is the Space Thermos. Originally published without a scale for reference, it was mistaken for a medical suppository, usually listed in the Advanced Medicines catalogue aboard hospital carriers. Once an updated photograph was released, it was clear that unless you're the kind of person that farts like a ship's foghorn, it most definitely isn't the right size to be used in quite that manner. No, the Space Thermos generates an electromagnetic pulse guaranteed to invalidate the warranty on your latest expensive G-phone, scramble your neighbour's TV set, and prevent all manner of dangerous Mr. Dusty attacks. With a pulse of a size that's normally reserved for the effects of a pocket tactical nuke, the Space Thermos is a true Q-branch special. Turn the lid one way, and you've got a detachable cup and container for your warm soup. Turn it the other way, and on the count of three, you can make any passing cyborg twerk, twist, and macarena their way into a huge repair bill. There have been a number of sartorial choices revealed for the discerning pedestrian, with the late spring collection including new suits that pay tribute to some design classics. There's the Dark Helmet Combat Special, also known as the Cobra Commander, which comes with a free Mr. Coffee for that hot beverage whilst watching radar. The Lacon, with prominent vertical bars in front of your eyes to give you that I'm just going to take this corner wide feeling whilst walking about, and of course the multi-purpose Maverick suit, which comes with detachable multi-tool, radio wristwatch, voice changer, and of course two-way ham radio. These collections are available in many colours to suit your preferences, but do appear to be available in only one size. There are concerns that 6 years of sitting on their bum flying spaceships might have left many commanders in dire need of a visit to the sports facilities. or a good Med-B star lube and shoehorn combo in order to get into the suit. Hutton investigators have announced that following a desperate search for the frameshift bandits, they may have discovered their hideout in an obscure corner of the bubble. If, of course, bubbles actually have corners. And, possibly right on the edge of populated space. This Wild West system hosts their hideout, and what's more, there are rumours they've been pilfering everything that's not nailed down, and quite a lot of things that were, but could be easily removed by an arc cutter and a bit of grunting and shoving. Hutton are assembling a crack team of infiltrators to enter the hideout and take absolutely everything back that they've pinched. From the power regulator seen the other day, to all the med packs they thought they'd help themselves to, and even the data they downloaded from the computer systems. Yes, Operation Alpha Armageddon is go for Saturday the 3rd of April at 2000.
You do know that those were secret plans, don't you?
Yeah, and?
Well, you just broadcast them to the galaxy.
Bother. Forget you heard anything. Anyway, looks like they might be prepared for us then. So once you gain access to the simulator on Monday, you'll want to get into training for what looks like is going to be one heck of a gunfight at the not-okay-not-one-bit Corral, home of the frameshift bandits. Oh, and then we'll stop for selfies, shenanigans and cucumber sandwiches after, for those that don't like the shooty bits.
Since Monday, Hutton has dramatically lost 15% influence to the Mad Monks of Van Manen over at Epsilon Eridani. Normally a very stable system, while simultaneously suffering from an outbreak of a previously unknown variant of Space Lurgy. Whilst it's common knowledge that the Mad Monks have some dirty habits, their lack of quality control on their tonic wine production line is the stuff of legend. But it does result in some interesting and even vintage batches. It seems that, heady on one of their better brews, they've gone all in and have gambled their only asset in Epsilon Eridani, that's Lena Weaver Landing, against the Huttonheld station Fortress Cousins. Polling starts tomorrow. Get your crosses ready. Yes, the Mad Monks of Van Manen gave everyone mods. This terrible condition caused by not using a Hutton mug regularly enough appears to have been caused by a mug inhibitor added on the sly. Symptoms have included space lurgy, itchy flight suit syndrome, hotbox thumb, not to be confused with hotbox finger, which is what to show people who get their legs out, and of course, extreme explosive flatulence. Ordinarily, being such pious souls, no one could ever have expected them to regard us with such envious eyes, and slowly but surely, they stooped to slipping a Mickey Finn into their famous libation and drew their plans against us. Is this revenge for Hutton ousting them from their home system? Perhaps their vow of silence means that we'll never know, as they remain tight-lipped on the matter. Remember, in the Mad Monk's Monastery, no one can hear you scream. Supplies of meds proved initially difficult to source, and it's suspected that systems have held on to their own supplies until the Eridani variant is genetically decoded. Consequently, they've put up few drugs to sell on the open market. However, supplies have been located further afield, and some independent pilots have answered the call by bunging a few hundred million credits to one of their old Space Academy chums. Some, even more unscrupulous profiteering mission givers, briefly took advantage of the situation, offering miserly sums, promises of influence, or paltry amounts of Grade 1 materials in return for large quantities of basic meds that they no doubt sold on at an outrageous profit. In stepped three Hutton fleet carriers, known locally as Big Pharma, Even Bigger Pharma, and Old Pharma Giles, which took up station at each of the Eridani starports, offering medicines at even lower than cost price. Willing truckers, loins girded, remlocks firmly in place, hands duly sanitised with a Centauri Megagen gel, distributed over 50,000 tonnes of medicines and lots of there to the local population. The French-speaking inhabitants appear to have translated there to la la la, and have been running around blathering this repeatedly with their hands clapped over their ears like there is a cune problem. Perhaps they put their faith in Médecins Sans Fromage. Eridanians would have been looking forward to slaking the thirst brought on by the outbreak when the pub lockdown ends, if it wasn't for the fact they now need a precautionary certification of medication. That, and the fact that the fleet carriers hadn't bought up and made off with all the beer.
Dear listener, I am coming in your ears this evening with an apology. Not for the first time, you may think, but it's been a while. On last week's show, we poked some fun at the much maligned Type 10 Defender. You know, the one which looks like Type 9's ugly cousin, that's been crashed through a wall repeatedly, set on fire and left in the sea for a fortnight. We laughed at the very thought of taking this malformed lump of breathtaking ugliness out on an exploration trip. We mocked its spoilers, all of them, tittered at its extra engines because they looked like they were made of plasticine and stuck on the side by a disinterested three-year-old. And we poured scorn and derision on its, well, everything. But we were wrong. Despite being a whole 350 tons heavier than the Type 9, having more spoilers than a Mandalorian fan site, and needing a bigger shield than the T9, sadly not an opaque one, the Type 10 Defender actually has a better jump range and can just about match the other giant of exploration, the Beluga, which is often to be seen at far-flung tourist beacons. How is this even possible, you ask? Well, it turns out that the blobfish of the space lanes has a secret. Gawping as it is on the outside, it is beautiful on the inside, and that beauty shows. Although equipped with a size 6 FSD from the showroom, it actually has space on board for a size 7, and this gives it an edge over many of its competitors. It's never going to challenge the Asp or the mighty Anaconda, but it can keep up with the Explorer Cutters and Explorer T9s, and even a fully kitted out Beluga space liner with luxury cabins, fully stocked bars and trees in its atrium. And it's the only ship that space mollusks and those weird giant star things won't approach. So, I apologise on behalf of myself and Hutton News, and especially on behalf of Juan Kerr, who wrote last week's article, and as such, is really the person that's to blame. I'm very, very sorry for the unkind words, although it really was Juan's fault. And I hope that Lakon Spaceways, the models of the Ladies of Lakon Calendar, and the members of the Type 10 Defender Owners Club, both of them, will forgive me, but mainly forgive Juan. And remember, the Midnight Black Paint job is available for the Type 10 for a modest amount of arcs and ensures that you won't be able to see most of it. So there is a silver lining to this big, ungainly, boxy, vomit-inducing cloud.
When Mods is raging all around and you're stuck in lockdown at your home station, it's quite possible that you may undergo certain changes in your routine. Your body can change as you get less vitamin D from not being exposed to starlight, even from a brown dwarf. You need to find things to occupy your day, and your eating habits can change. It was no surprise, therefore, for us to receive a message that Major General Noctavagus was experiencing an expanding gut. What was surprising was that he appears to be taking people and asking people to watch this expansion, which seems to us at the very least to be unsavory and at worst encouraging bad habits. A bit like encouraging combatants at a bare-knuckle fist fight with a kick him in a fork. We were about to raise a protest when Nocti clarified his position. This was not related to corporation of the bodily kind. It was the corporation of the corporate type, Core Dynamics to be precise, and the gut was actually a Farragut-class battlecruiser, Alvin's Bark, which, now we come to think of it, we've mentioned here before. So goodness knows why we misunderstood. The Major General has apparently taken control of one of the third 3D printing space docks that usually are employed in creating capital ships and bent it to his will. This was necessary as although This project started in January 3306. Using his own equipment, Nocti had only been able to fabricate the little insert that goes inside the ashtray in the left-hand pilot's seat, and was in danger of never completing this task. The news this week is that it's now possible to watch the creation of Nocti's ship via vidcast. And if you find videos of paint drying too racy for you, or you get nausea from the sheer speed of your grass as it grows, then this is the one for you. Tune to twitch.tv/its_Nocti, that's ITS_NOCTI, especially as he is close to getting yet another medal, this time for being an affiliate. One thing we should warn you about is that Nocti's very much an old-fashioned independent pilot, and the space dock is owned by the Federation, and they each use different measurement units. So very much like the Beagle Mars lander of 1,308 years ago, and don't tell Nocti, it will break his heart, things are not quite the size he's expecting. It's not quite large enough to walk around in, or to land a ship on. It will actually reasonably comfortably fit inside the Major General's quarters.
Further to our revealing information earlier about the Pilots Federation being all revealing, we're being spoiled with more information on an almost daily basis at the moment. Hutton's photography team were invited into one of the new, hastily crafted social areas, recently completed by a swarm of Volcab B drones supervised by the Pilots Federation, and we must admit, we're mighty impressed. These new social hubs are the hive of interaction. Everywhere you turn, you can see familiar faces, luminaries from the mission boards that you're used to seeing on your screen, but in glorious 3D. There's a bar, there's a store, there are dodgy looking types hanging around offering to sell you everything from knockoff hot mugs to rares from throughout the galaxy. Surrounding you, there are holograms of ships for sales, hollow banners hanging from the ceiling promoting the newest exciting technology. But as far as we were granted access to this exciting hub, a klaxon sounded and we were bundled outside of a door. The entire showcase was raided by the Galactic Music Licensing Agency. The music in the bar was shut down. The jukebox was bought offline with a portable EMP grenade. And it looks like the barman was arrested, subjected to a rather painful-looking introduction to the floor, and then carted off in a waiting DMCA enforcement wagon. We attempted to interview our host about it, but all she could say was she was sure that they bought more than the blue drambuie for the launch event, and besides, Sati had been dead for hundreds of years, and she was sure that no one would mind. A passing enforcer quite simply said, "If it's not Strauss, then we don't want to know." What little footage we obtained provide new insights into the upgraded shipyard and trading interface via a handy touchscreen console. Shortly after, though, we were bundled into a waiting Beluga. A short lift ride down to the hangar, and we were swiftly escorted off the premises before we, too, were arrested for loitering with intent to listening to music, which we understand is a felony, only surpassed by being caught speeding in the docking area. One item of note, though, one of the dodgy individuals in the bar that was offering a particularly ropey-sounding contract looked an awful lot like a notorious frameshift bandit. Arf.
During recent attempts to round up stray drones, probes and rovers which have been plaguing the inhabitants of Olympus Village, Federation archaeologists have made an interesting discovery. The 21st century Ingenuity helicopter drone was captured with a big butterfly net and using roundhead screws as bait as it tried to steal technology from a biffer bin at the back of the Olympus Village branch of Asteroid. That's a discount homewares and electrical supplier. The drone was then taken to Federation labs for tests. During these tests, Ingenuity was found to have a small section of muslin cloth attached to a strut just under its rotor. Investigations confirmed that this is part of the Wright brothers' Flyer 1, which made the first powered flight back on Earth in 1903 and was attached to Ingenuity as a tribute to Wilbur and Orville's legacy. Observers have said that Perseverance is keeping a vigil outside of the facility and has taken to holding up a Zippo lighter and a sign which says, "Give my baby back," in impeccable binary script. The banner is said to be massive. This story relates to a little-known fact about Hutton Orbital. We have an actual piece of hull plating from Commander Jameson's Cobra attached to the station. It was left there many years ago when Commander Jameson misjudged his approach to Pad 1, causing some damage to the station and losing said piece of hull plate in the process. We've attempted to contact Commander Jameson at his last known address of HIP 12099 Planet 1B, but although his Cobra was parked there, he was not at home. So I would like to send a message over the airwaves. Commander John Jameson, elite combatier, hero of the human race and inspiration to billions. You owe us 500 credits, you tight-fisted bastard. Pay up or we're taking the Cobra.
After last week's quiet time in Hutton space, we've seen more activity in some systems and an utter shock in one. However, my thunder was already stolen as Epsilon Eridani and its outbreak was covered in some detail in the earlier news article, so I won't dwell on that any further. It just remains to win the election. Five other systems are below 40%, allowing other factions to squabble and lock up influence, notably Barnard Star, Wolf 1481, and Wise 0855-0714, which all need a 10% boost. Kakari and Trepin has improved in the wing, but we need to establish and maintain a larger gap with the minor factions, particularly the Earth Defence Fleet. Terrorists attacked LP-535-29 after the last update. Isn't Laven Sol enough for them? That was over by Tuesday, and they moved straight into LHS-340, which finds itself in a boom state. Whether this is a result of or despite the terrorist attack is undecided until the smoke clears. Meanwhile, at the top end of the Hutton System League, eight systems, yes, eight, a third of them, are attempting to outdo each other above 60, with LHS-340 above 75 despite its terrorism incident, making it well placed for expansion into Wolf 562 in 5 days, as it has just triggered. We only need to expand from one system, folks. It's not a race. Keep them down below 60, please. Put all that effort into some of the systems at the other end of the table. In Colonia, Generalissimo Hanke reports that all is generally well, but Deriso has fallen by over 8% and would benefit from bounty vouchers, passenger missions, and exploration data. We still need to leave Hotel Carson and Ari, where the roommate is now complaining that Commander's having too long a lie-in without putting out the Do Not Disturb sign. We know those rooms are on the warm side, but could you at least wear some pants? Hutton are down to only 5% influence from the mid-20s, so help out and give us a nudge to finally check out of there. Priorities this week. If you want to truck something, Epsilon Eridani needs you to canvass and vote in the pending election, and also boost Hutton influence in Barnard Star, Wolf 1481, and Wise 0855-0714. If you want to shoot something, the Mad Monk season has opened up in Epsilon Eridani. We still need to exit Carson and Ari, so help any of the factions there except Hutton.
Here's the news for events organised by the community themselves. Eros Maidlung has sent us a message in the space bottle, telling us of life on the FTM Esfahan, the trip being piloted by a committee of anyone who wants to vote, and we all know how well the results of votes usually turn out, don't we? His message says, in very bad handwriting, flaming scientists, Bam fell asleep somewhere and we left him behind, moving 16,000 light years by the time he woke up. Babster has been furiously mapping black holes and finding that they are mostly black and hole-like. I've been mostly trying to rebuild the tritium reserves. No jump plans yet until we can replenish the fuel. P.S. I finally worked out what that noise was. I asked for feedback and what I got was an annoying high-pitched whine, so I turned that off straight away. Commander Mephisto has sent me a lovely type note. See, Eros, it can be done. About what's happening in the comfy cannon crews, taking folks around the galaxy in comfort and safety. A sort of safari for pilots who might, you might say, and here's his note about how safari they got on. I'll get my coat. We had something for every explorer. Geologists admired fumaroles, geysers, lava spouts and crystalline shards. Xenobiologists studied different anemones as well as brain trees and more mollusks. For planetologists, we had crystals and lattice mineral spheres. Astrophysicists explored all around the route. Archaeologists dug around in guardian ruins, but some maybe only to acquire fancy tech before the bubble is out of reach. Congratulations go to Conchu Scout Commander Sita 1V, who gained the Elite Dangerous rank while excelling in their duty. Fun was had at an SRV race, the first event of the cruise. Commander Hunter has a brief report on the 5 Eurotours expedition, the one for new pilots who want to explore without fleet carriers but with friends, to say that they've covered 700,000 light years, which is about a third of the total distance, in just under 12 days. Only 6 commanders so far got to the rebuy screen. And Hunter says he discovered a planet that seemed to be in the midst of a dust storm, and he nearly cooked his passengers alive, playing with a group of P-02 anomalies. Of course, the Alpha Antics start soon, as mentioned by Vantion, so stay tuned for more detail than you could possibly want in just a few minutes. And finally, Commander Prophet Velen, keeper of the FTM Cloud Atlas, hasn't so much dropped his space glove as thrown down the gauntlet to the people behind the Hayden Blackbrew Book of Records. Telling us something that will happen in the future is only fitting for a prophet, and it's a galactic speed record attempt starting this Saturday, 27th of March at 1700 UTC from HD 148 9373, which is a high metal content world 258 light seconds from the arrival star. The ship he's using is the Beelzebub, a Viper decorated with white stars and a rather vulgar gold paint job. If you can't make it to the start, see the people from the Hayden Blackbrew Book of Records with their space clipboards and space stopwatches, and you can't be present to wish them bon voyage and hear him show his gratitude by mouthing at you, "Get out of the bloody way!" Then he's arranged for a remote vidcast, which you can access by tuning in at twitch.tv/FTM_CloudAtlas. Until recently, it wasn't exactly clear which record he's trying to break. It could equally have been the fastest round the galaxy with one hand tied behind his back, the fastest speed managed before the surface of the planet rearranged his molecules, or the fastest eating of 20 McThargoids Big Tharg burgers. However, he just assures that the record he's trying to break is for the fastest in normal space. The record is currently 34,526 metres a second, but he's hoping to hit 34,600. Good luck, and if he meets any solid objects at that speed, the last thing that'll be go through his mind is the back of his remlock. And that's all the news we have on the events that our holy community organised. Don't forget to let us know if you hear of any others.
Whoa, whoa, stop, wait a minute. I've got another one.
What do you mean you've got another one? That's it, we've got no more bongs left.
Well, you just have to find one somewhere. I've got extra news.
You can't just go inserting extra bongs into things at the drop of a hat. It takes me ages to get these things this badly set up.
Well, I tell you what, I'll do my own bong then, right? Bong. Saint Summertime of Britain is to be honoured this weekend and for the next 7 months in gratitude of our many sacrifices going back to the days of Magna Carta. For those who don't know, Magna Carta, she was a brave Hungarian peasant girl who forced King John to shut all the pubs early before being chased away by villagers with torches and pitchforks. But tonight, we are concerned with Saint Summertime, patron saint of sunburn and windbreaks, who is believed to bring overpriced ice cream, warm rain, and to put sand in the sandwiches of commanders who originate in the UK. This weekend we shall honour her in the traditional ways and in keeping with the texts of old which say, "For I am British summertime, and you must give unto me 1 hour of your sacred Sunday lion." This means that for the next 7 months, UK aligned commanders will adjust their onboard clocks and will operate at UTC plus 1 hour. For it is written, "Please be respectful of our ways and make allowances for UK commanders being 1 hour earlier to everything than everyone else." That's it. Can I do the thing? I don't have any more. I'm done now.
You sure? I can push the button. There's no shouting.
Yeah, push the button.
Push the button.
Okay. No,
push the button.